good morning or good evening, everyone around this rotating globe. Welcome to that very special, enchanted, magical time of day between dusk and dawn where really everything you think you know is open to question. And tonight I'm going to really pose some very, very serious questions about this incredible phenomenon. Do you realize how incredibly uniquely special this moment in history is? I mean, this is living up to everything one could have predicted vis-a-vis the end of the Mayan calendar, the turn of the great Platonic year, any of those hoary ancient cliches that describe this nodal point that's rushing at us, or we're rushing at it, at warp 9. I mean, the rate of the rate of the rate of change, even in the space of a few days now, a week, is absolutely mind-boggling. And one of the only ways that most of us have to kind of take the temperature of this rate of change is by following the increasingly bizarre, increasingly polarized, increasingly shrill thing that's passing is political conversation. I mean, a guy dies. He's obviously a hero. I mean, look at his record in Hanoi. There's no way that's a lie. There's no way that's made up. That's reality with a capital R. Guy does that, goes through that, sacrifices for that, is offered to go home, refuses, finds out later from Kissinger that, you know, Kissinger also wouldn't let him come home and his dad wouldn't let him. But he independently, we know this from so many sources. So tonight, what we're going to talk about, beyond all the individual ins and outs and cross weavings and stories and arcs and good guys and bad guys and plots, I mean, this is one hell of a television show. Really, we're living through a living television reality show. But it's so much more than that. That's only the veneer. That's only the surface. So tonight I want to try to penetrate the reality, the four-dimensional, multiple-dimensional realities behind what we're going through right now, what we're living through, what we're watching through moment by moment, or as they said in that great line from Forbidden Planet, from microsecond to microsecond. Because this is not reality. Reality doesn't change on a dime like this reality did. So I want to talk about frequencies and resonances and beat frequencies and metaphysics, because what I'm seeing is so much deeper than any of the conversations. And I'm going to quote as my source and reference on this, none other than the President of the United States himself, Donald J. Trump. Going back 3 years, and you'll see there's an extraordinary pattern that has emerged. Now, I've said often, quoting whoever said it before I did, but I loved it, so I've been using it, science is nothing if it's not prediction, which means if we've got a model, and there are some Trump folks tonight who are absolutely adamant, there's no way, Hoagland, you can be so arrogant as to think you've cracked the Q thing. It's like, and no one's told them, you know, the same data I'm going to lay out in a pattern that comes to this question of who is Q and what's the real agenda behind the whole Q aspect of the Trump presidency. I'm going to lay out the cards. I'm going to lay out the dots and show how I've connected them. Yours, you know, as they used to say many ages ago, your mileage may vary. Point is, without a process, without a set of facts we all can agree on that are the beginning of speculation, beginning of informed analysis, beginning of basically guesses, you can't have a conversation. You can't have a mutually beneficial conversation. And what I'm seeing in the country at large and the events of the last week so typified, so personified this, it's becoming increasingly difficult to have ordinary, reasonable conversations in this society about almost anything. I mean, I'm watching people going really off the deep end, left and right, all around me. Family members, people that I can't imagine why they're hanging their hat on the position they've taken when, well, I'm going to try to demonstrate tonight, all these positions are made up. And again, we only have to follow the words of the sage at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue to see what he's been trying from the beginning to tell us. And with all due respect to everyone who is following, you know, the Trump Republican brand these days, I don't think people are beginning to imagine the realities and the extraordinary things that are being covered up and kept hidden. I mean, their biggest conspiracy is about personages as opposed to the metaphysics of what's going down in the next few months. And we're going to talk a bit tonight about the so-called hyperdimensional calendar and all that. So before we get into any of that, let me open up cosmically, because news always starts the top of this show. If you go to theothersideofmidnight.com and click on tonight's graphic, which is the ephemeral question, the metaphysics of Donald Trump, that will take you to the guest page tonight. Scroll down under Radio with Pictures to My Items. And number one is a very interesting story that bypassed everybody this week, but I think is kind of emblematic of some of these meta-truths we're going to try to grapple with. This week, the astronauts on board the International Space Station had to find a leak. Something zipping through the solar system at high speed intersected the orbit trajectory of the space station, and there was a collision. And the collision left a thumb-sized hole. It turns out in the Soyuz, the spacecraft, which is always attached to the space station to take the crew home in case they should have to abandon ship. Anyway, they found the leak. Houston found it initially by detecting a slow but steady pressure drop. And it was so tiny, given the size of the station and the size of the space vehicles and the size of the hole they eventually found, that they could wait till morning to wake the astronauts and all that. But it's interesting to see the hype around this story the press is so hyped now to amplify any little signal. So this is a really mundane kind of story, because things are hitting other things in space all the time. This thing was really blown up. The astronauts could die. Not exactly. Anyway, so they fixed it with some epoxy and kept on tape. And it's good as new, because, of course, you know, that stuff seals. But what's interesting, that's not good. That is not good. It looks like we have lost Blog Talk. So, Keith, that means you have to swing into action and reconnect us while I continue with the stream. So all our stream listeners, aren't you lucky that you've signed up for Club 19.5 and you can actually continue to listen while we get Blog Talk back? I don't think they like what I'm going to be talking tonight about in terms of the president. Okay, so continuing on down in Radio with Pictures, and let me do this just for the moment so we can do this without everybody's ears being blown out. Item number two, NASA just gave a very cryptic and kind of sideways announcement vis-a-vis the Opportunity rover. Now, you know, follow the show, that Opportunity is one of the two surviving rovers on the surface of Mars. Well, Opportunity is one, and the other one is Curiosity. And they're on opposite sides of the planets, and one is solar-powered and the other is nuclear-powered. So Opportunity is the solar-powered one, and about 3-4 months ago, beginning in May, a local dust storm on Mars blew up into a planet-wide sunlight-killing shield that basically has drowned the meager sun at Mars distance in a hopeless haze of yellow swirling dust. And little Opportunity on the surface, with its solar panels, watch the light levels and thereby the power from those solar panels go down and down and down until there wasn't enough energy for the spacecraft to survive. So it put itself into hibernate mode. And NASA for the last several months has been waiting for the dust storm to stop, for the dust to settle, for the sun to return and for power to be restored once again to the solar cells, on which Opportunity survives, and they will recharge the batteries, and there will, by over several week period, it will come back on the air. Well, in the last 24 hours, NASA has given this very remarkable kind of ultimatum, having to do with the fact that they're only going to listen and actively ping, you know, say, Opportunity, are you there, with transmitters on Earth for the next 45 days, which puts us in the middle of October, I think, when they will then stop broadcasting, are you there, signals, and continue up until January a listen mode. They'll dedicate certain of the antennas on the Deep Space Network around the world to looking and listening to Mars to see if Opportunity phones home. And this is all in a very rushed time frame, but it's, to me, again, given the conversation we're going to have later on tonight, I don't think this is technical at all. I think this is more symbology, the kind of ultimatum on Opportunity phone home or else. And it's going to be interesting if they actually find it or if it never calls home again because of the problems occasioned by the dust storm. Well, be that as it may, that kind of sets the scene for these deep metaphysical epistemological questions. And I'm not going to go further down the radio with pictures until I introduce my guests. So in no particular order, because this is just the way that they got hung up on the screen this evening. Robert Morningstar is our civilian intelligence analyst. I can say ours because he's been on the show almost more than I have. He's also an investigative journalist and this comes in really handy, a psychotherapist living in New York City. And you can read the rest of his bio and all that. Kelly M. loves to talk science, the history and stories of science. She's a contributor to my friend and our friend, Dr. Joseph Farrell's GizaDeathStar.com website. She has degrees in history and philosophy of science, economics, and physics, and she attended the Columbia University Graduate School of Journalism and earned a certificate in science writing, which is critical these days. Communication of science is incredibly important and lacking in so many areas. And has been editor of several high technology publications. She's a professional level musician. Oh, darn, we don't have that music yet. And an aspiring storyteller using the tools of fiction. And you can read the rest of her bio there if you go to The Other Side of Midnight and go to tonight's guest page. And last but not least, Georgia Lambert has over 50 years of experience in the fields of esoteric studies, receiving formal training in Eastern and Western disciplines, methods, and traditions. She was the first to be licensed by the state of California to teach meditation and esoteric physiology. An experimental course she presented for 3 years at the College of Osteopathic Medicine of the Pacific. And she also worked for many years, maybe a couple of decades, I think, for Manly Hall. And that's going to be the area we're going to focus on tonight because this is our metaphysical Trump exploration. So, boys and girls, ladies and germs, as Jimmy Durante would say, welcome to The Other Side.
Good evening, Richard.
Good evening, Georgia.
Hi, Richard.
Hi, Robert. Hi, Kelly. Okay. I want to deal tonight in really big issues. And I know we're going to get into some personalities and some local politics and all that. And frankly, I'm going to say right up front, I think it's all bunk. I think we have been on a sleigh ride for 3 years by a master magician, a mega talent in the form of Donald Trump. And all of us, left, right, middle, conspiracy theorists, squeaky clean mainstream folks that wouldn't deign to entertain a conspiracy, everybody has been hornswoggled by a deliberate distraction, which is at a metaphysical level at this nodal point in history, designed to get us to look over there when the real action is going on over here. And before I get into any specifics, I want to give each of my panelists tonight a chance to kind of weigh in on some of these things. So let's start with you, Georgia. I right? Am I wrong? Am I barking up the wrong, telephone pole?
Well, from my perspective, obviously, what's going on has to do with making choices. As you have always said, we're at that amazing time where the good seem to be getting better and the bad seem to be getting more blatant. And this is giving humanity, not just in our country, but really all around the world, a chance to decide what kind of people we want to be.
Okay. Robert. Unmuting helps.
Yes, it does. Well, I think that I couldn't agree with you more that the master magician is in the White House. And it's almost a mystical power he's wielding through mastery of mass media. Donald Trump is the first president of the United States who rocked Marshall McLuhan and the medium as a massage 100%.
I'd argue with you on JFK. I'd really give you a run for your money on the idea that JFK was the first, but.
Well, yeah, in the sense of just small media, I'm talking about mega media.
He didn't have the world at his fingertips, and Donald Trump does. So it's basically amplitude of scale.
Of course, but he is weaving a new reality for everyone. And just as in the movie, the old Wizard of Oz had to be eliminated by pulling back the curtain, removing the veil, that's what's been happening. And the decrepitude of the deep state is self-evident, and its demise is imminent because we don't need a deep state anymore. The reason for the deep state being formed in the first place was hiding the UFO issue and obfuscating and hiding the presence of aliens in our history. And that has fallen away, and there's no need for that anymore. And that's what we see. Dismantling it.
Or that we are the aliens.
We are. I've always said we are the Martians.
Okay. Anyway, Kelly.
Yeah. So my thought process is with respect, I mean, I'm not really sure what the question is. You sort of left it open-ended. So that's good for me because I like open-ended. So what I would say is that, you know, if you look at, the whole argument has been about Russia collusion. And I actually wrote a blog on this on Giza Death Star a while back. But if you look at what Russia has done after the fall of the Soviet Union and after the rape of Russia, they built or restored 25,000 churches in Russia. And so there's a real push on in Russia to restore Orthodox Christian cosmology in Russia. And then for those people who are who are atheists, there's a philosophy called cosmism, which is sort of like socialism is to communism as cosmism is to orthodoxy, right? And so that's been going on over there. And what you do, if you look really closely at Trump's rallies, he's always got this sort of old-time patriotic music playing, like John Philip Sousa type stuff. And you see, like, a lot of traditional.
Wait. When was he playing Sousa? Because I've noticed, going back to the first rallies, that what he plays, there are two songs he's played. One is from The Doors, I Think You Can't Always Get What You Want.
No, that's The Stones, and that's always at the end, which is interesting. In the beginning, it's always patriotic music, like Marine Corps band kind of stuff. Mm. And at the end of it, he plays You Can't Always Get What You Want from the Rolling Stones, which is, you know, a rather dissonant thing to put at the
end. Isn't it?
Yeah.
Unless
that's part of the magic. He's like reducing people's expectations.
Well, at a deep subliminal level. I want to get into the – okay, so we have each of your positions. And mine is that nothing is as it appears. Nothing. Nothing, 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 nothing. Going back to Trump himself. So let me start, guys, with what happened today. Today, we had a national catharsis in the farewell, events at the National Cathedral to John McCain. And I remember growing up in an era where people who were demonstrably heroes in war were treated with a certain respect, regardless of what happened to them afterwards, that very act of sacrifice and many times it resulted in death. So they were memorialized posthumously. But that very act was kind of the central sacred nature of the American experience. That's how we gathered around, as Peter Jennings once said, the national campfire. And there was a tremendous amount of that going on this past week. And then there was a dissonant amount of totally counter-programmed invective and positions and voices saying that nothing that we were seeing in terms of the heroism of John McCain was worthy of what we were seeing as part of this national experience going back, you know, since he died and lay in state in Phoenix and then was brought to Washington and the Capitol and then today's ceremony at the National Cathedral. So, Georgia, help me here. What the heck is going on to where identical good people on both sides, quoting a certain president, can look at the same set of events and come to radically and vituperative, angry, hate-filled rhetoric about the same event? Help.
Help. Well, human beings tend to absorb information through their own filters. And some see through the glass darkly, and some see through rose-colored glasses. And unfortunately, that's the way it is. However, you mentioned the activity in the National Cathedral. I don't know if this is the time, but I'd like to share some...
No. This is the time. This is okay. Exactly the segue I wanted.
All righty, then. As your resident...
It's obvious that we had these two incredible national goodbyes the same week. Aretha Franklin, I'm going to talk about a bit later, and John McCain. And it's like this incredible mirror was being held up to all of us, and the reflections we saw seemed to be so dependent on the chairs we're sitting in. I've never, ever in my entire life experienced this intense, raw, emotional polarization like is going on right now.
Let me share some things about the National Cathedral, because obviously there was great activity there this morning, not only for the people that are sitting there, but the focused intent of everyone watching on TV, you know, energy follows thought, as they say. Yep. So there was a tremendous focus there. There are two points in Washington that are extremely
involved. Excuse me, as Dean Radin would say, a point of attention.
Yes, exactly. There are two main points of invocation in Washington, D.C. One is the Washington Monument, and one is the National Cathedral. Now, the National Cathedral, there's some very interesting things about this particular building. First of all, it's built on St. Alban's Hill. Alba is the old Celtic word for white. So it's built on the White Hill. There's a boys' school on the ground dedicated to St. Albans, who was a Roman soldier in early Romano Britain, who was executed for giving shelter to people fleeing persecution. Interesting. It was built on, the building was started on St. Michael's Day, which is September 29th, which is a day that traditionally stands for the grounding of spiritual energy into the earth. And 80 years later, it was finished on St. Michael's Day, both with Masonic ceremonies.
Oh, how special.
Yeah. Now, the thing about Gothic cathedrals is that in medieval times, there were two main types of architectural patterns. One was called ad quadratum, which was based on the square, which symbolizes matter. The other was called ad triangulum, which is based on the triangle, symbolizing spirit. The Gothic architecture combined both of them. And what this produces in a truly laid out Gothic building is a tesseract.
Aw. Isn't that special?
Isn't that special? And I could go off into a whole thing about the any kind of temple being a reflection of stuff that goes on within the human instrument And there's some stuff that goes on in the head at certain levels of meditation that have to do with this tesseract. So the interesting thing here, getting down to brass tacks that aren't really in the info on the visitor page of the National Cathedral, there's a very strong connection between the National Cathedral and Glastonbury in England. Now, for your audience that doesn't know much about Glastonbury, other than, you know, the rock festival that they have there every year, it's a very sacred place. It's considered to be the greater heart center of England. The two major ley lines, the masculine and feminine, or the Michael line and the Mary line, cross over the high altar in the ruins of Glastonbury Abbey, and then go on a little bit further where they actually mate on Glastonbury Tor.
Mm.
The way the National Cathedral is laid out is that under the high altar in the National Cathedral, where the ceremony took place today, right under that is the crypt, and there is a chapel dedicated to Joseph of Arimathea, who is an obscure saint. He's an obscure saint who was the uncle of Jesus. He provided the tomb. He was the wealthy one that had tin mines in Cornwall. And he's tied up with all the legends of the Holy Grail. And a lot of the esotericism of Glastonbury Abbey. If that wasn't enough of a hint, there is a stone chair in that crypt made from the stone of the ruins of Glastonbury Abbey. And on the grounds between the chapel and the boys' school is a thorn bush taken from a cutting of the holy Glastonbury thorn, which is supposed to have grown from Joseph of Arimathea's staff as he planted it in the earth as after the crucifixion, via Joseph's ships, retreated to France, dropping off Lazarus and Mary Magdalene, and then on to England. So, and oh, by the way, Helen Keller is buried there too. So this crypt under the high altar at this point where this synthesis was taking place, bringing together of various lines, the building structure itself supported that. Again, amplifying not only what was taking place there, but all of the attention through the various media focused right on that particular spot. It's very interesting that if we're thinking of tesseracts, there's a very famous painting by Salvador Dali.
Know it well.
Corpus Hybricubus, which shows the cross as a tesseract, which is sort of a bridge between four dimensions and three dimensions, and the Masonic floor under the tesseract.
I tell you, hold it there, because we're at the bottom of the hour, and I have something special I want to do. You know, the whole thing about John McCain and the National Cathedral, we're going to return to George on the other side and pick up the rest of this story, is that when McCain was let out of, you know, the Hanoi Hilton, the music that was playing was ABBA. And this song became one of his favorites because his entire life, including what was said today in his absence, was take a chance on me and what I stand for. You're on the other side of midnight. We shall return.
Take a chance on me. I'm the first kid.
to the first hour of The Other Side of Midnight. Be sure to catch our complete live show every Saturday and Sunday night at 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern, for a full 3 hours of this kind of exploration. And be sure to visit theothersideofmidnight.com as you listen so you can follow our special Radio with Pictures guest page simultaneously. Kinthea, our hardworking producer, specifically prepares to illustrate the topics discussed each show. Why? Because there is vital additional information on that Radio with Pictures guest page that I assure you will immeasurably enhance your understanding and enjoyment what our guests are describing. I mean, would you rather listen to a guest talk about NASA images of ancient artifacts on Mars or simultaneously be able to follow the official NASA images showing you, as you're listening, the ruins? If you'd like to listen at your convenience to all our shows, including our unique Radio with Pictures feature, please visit theothersideofmidnight.com and click on the Join Club 19.5 link in the left-hand column. Okay, what do you get with your Club 19.5 membership, besides helping the show literally stay on the air? Well, first of all, you will exclusively, this is not available to the general public, enjoy our enhanced ad-free podcast, courtesy of Chris Bell, automatically downloading all the latest The Other Side of Midnight shows directly to your favorite podcast device so you can listen when you want to. Further, as a full Club 19.5 member, you will gain exclusive access to our The Other Side of Midnight 24/7 chat server, what I can't help calling the Open Hailing Frequencies Room, which is available only to members 24/7. Now, during the show, that's where you will find other 19.5 members and sometimes even members of the bridge crew, my guests, and even me when I have time. Regardless, you can always relay live questions to me during the show just by going to the Open Hailing Frequencies room. Of course, when we're not on the air with your 19.5 membership, you can visit our Club 19.5 radio archives anytime and download all our shows directly to your computer, which will automatically provide you a screen size that allows you to really examine the remarkable images Kinthea posts for each show. Okay, here's where I need to get kind of super serious. Club 19.5 is how our show is currently solely supported. In my hopefully not vain attempt to keep commercials to a minimum, if you're concerned about keeping us on the air, if you want to hear information that has been vetted far more than perhaps any other show, the best way to ensure that is to join Club 19.5 and get your friends and family to join too. And if you don't know already, when I drop by Open Hailing Frequencies, you can even ask me directly what the ultimate meaning is behind 19.5, literally the most exclusive club in the world. Please join me and my interesting guests on this very stream every Saturday and Sunday night at 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern, and be sure to come back and listen to our live 3-hour shows. Thanks for listening, and now, back to the show. Welcome back, everyone, to this Saturday night, The Other Side of Midnight. My guests this morning, Robert Morningstar, Kelly M., and Georgia Lambert, and we're really delving deep. I want to go beyond the surface politics, because, again, my model is it's all, quoting Shakespeare, who was quoted today at the National Cathedral, it's a lot of sound and fury signifying nothing. It's deliberate deception by the magician in charge, by Trump himself, to get us to look away from what we really should be kind of paying attention to. So let's go back to the intense symbolism and connections with England. It's really ironic, Georgia, that tomorrow night we have Maria Wheatley on, who is an archaeologist and a dowser and a esoteric magician in her own right, and she's going to be talking about some of these remarkable ancient monuments at this moment in the physics there in England, including Glastonbury Tor. So please continue.
Well, pretty much I had laid out some of the interesting symbology and things that were consciously built into the structure of this particular cathedral. Again, being a tesseract, it's sort of a bridge between this dimension and something higher.
Oh, and I got to interrupt again. We had someone send in a note through the to the Skype thing. What the heck is a tesseract?
It's also called a hypercube. You know how if you
which
get
which means it's a double tetrahedron. It's a nested double tetrahedron, which is why I was jumping up and down, even though people couldn't see me, because it's 19.5 over and over and over and over and over and over again. You can't get more hyperdimensional, metaphysical, with the accent on the physics of physical, than this coded symbolism right there in the National Cathedral.
Exactly. The best way to describe a tesseract easily would be...
Without waving your arms now.
Exactly. If you get a box at Amazon, you know, that your stuff comes in, you can take that box and flatten it out. You can unfold it and make it flat, right? So you, if you've got a flat box or you go to the store to buy something to mail, you've got a flat box. But you can fold it and make a three-dimensional figure. Well, one way of looking at a tesseract is the way that a fourth-dimensional figure looks in three dimensions is the best way to describe it. There was a wonderful children's book called A Wrinkle in Time by Madeleine L'Engle.
Famous hyperdimensional book.
Yeah, all about tesseracts. So it's this bridge between this physical plane that we're operating on and something higher. And the connection with England, particularly Glastonbury, which if you remember at the British Olympics, Glastonbury Tor was very heavily figured with not a lot of explanation.
Just this spire on this weird-shaped hill.
Some night we should do a whole show on the metaphysics of Glastonbury because it's pretty interesting. But in metaphysical literature, it's said that the soul of this country is the same energy as the soul of Britain, and that a lot of the esoterics that were part of that culture were translated here, not only by Freemasons, but by Rosicrucians, who were part of the early founding of this nation.
Mm.
So at the highest hill, it's kind of like Rome, you know, that was built on seven hills. Washington has hills. The National Cathedral is on the White Mountain, or the White Hill, which is the highest in the Washington area. And we have this huge, invocative temple or structure that can amplify and broadcast whatever's focused into it. And today, synthesis was focused into it.
You can say that, but I can prove that.
Well, when Robin there's and the I road went, trip for you.
Well, when Robin and I went to Scotland to measure that remarkable chapel, what's the darn name?
Roslyn Chapel. Yep.
I mean, my Anchotron went off scale. It just went into orbit. It oh my God, you know. So,
and they
I
say the crypt, the crypt there is pretty interesting too.
Well, yeah. The point is, these are like ancient pyramids and ancient Tibetan monasteries and all this. They're torsion field amplifiers. So you put all these special people, the creme de la creme, the political, you know, elites and corporate elites and media elites and all that in this amplifier. You then focus the attention of the world on this amplifier. You listen to the speeches and the themes that was carried from left and right through this amplifier to the world. And everyone who sent me emails over the last 48 hours, you know, that this was a basic conspiracy by the media to overwhelmingly counter-program to the president, I want to remind you that Donald Trump is the one orchestrating this entire show. Remember, He's the one that sent one of Air Force One's. Remember, it's only Air Force One when the president's on board. That airplane, that 797 that left from Phoenix to take John's body from there to the Capitol, that was done with the specific order and mandate of the president of the United States. I mean, if you think this fake, oh, he's not respecting him, and oh, he's saying this, and oh, he's saying, it's all a shadow kabuki theater. Because underneath, everyone in that town this afternoon was united on the ceremony, focused on that power center to amplify that message to the planet. Right, Georgia?
Definitely could be.
Definitely could be.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, if again, we're looking at the torsion physics, as you would say, of the whole thing, what was the quality of thought and feeling being focused for those couple hours and being broadcast to the rest of the world?
That we're all in this together.
Exactly. Exactly.
And what's bad about that? I mean, I can understand the people who are hating this whole idea. When you deconstruct that message, that was the primary message. No man is above the law or woman, and we're all in this together, and we are living in an extraordinary experiment, and this is part of the experiment, and we've lost sight of it. We've lost holding hands with each other to get through the experiment because there are stunning things in the background that are not being discussed while this soap opera, this deliberate stage soap opera, is diverting, again, in my model, our attention from the really big stuff going on behind the scenes. And I want to try to crack the big stuff. Okay, Georgia, let me ask you to kind of think about a couple things there. And let me move the spotlight over to Kelly. What are your thoughts?
Well, I didn't watch the funeral, so I don't really have a lot of thoughts on it. But I can tell you what I picked up by observing the corona of the event. And that is that I think that, efforts at, showing some level of national unity are, sort of, this is their job. This is what they're supposed to do, But on the other hand, I also feel like, every time, I, in terms of it being a kabuki, I definitely think there's kabuki, but I also think there's a deep conflict. There's a series of deep conflicts that exist in the world that are not, some of them are on the surface. Sometimes we're only seeing the tip of the iceberg. And I think those conflicts are real. I think they're related to money, and I think they're related to who gets to call the shots. And I think that the Rockefeller faction has been working for over 100 years to get us to a global government, and they've hit some roadblocks. And I think that one of those roadblocks is probably the faction behind Trump. And I think that bringing everyone together and telling Trump he couldn't come is it seems like it's really a lot of the propaganda is really organized towards making Trump's people angrier and angrier. And I think that's where the black magic is being focused and frustrating that the energy of the so-called deplorables. And so I think that it was like another one of those events, like when Barbara Bush died, Trump wasn't, was insulted and not invited. And then, they all get together and they say, it's a big club and you ain't in it.
Well, all right. On the surface, that's how it appears. But again, as I hope I demonstrated, the president himself furnished the airplane. I mean, suppose he'd said, in the portrayal of him as this, decadal-old child with a temper tantrum, the flag will be up, no, the flag will be down, oh, the flag will be up, that kind of thing. Suppose he had said in a temper tantrum, no, you can't use my airplanes. In other words, he's going along with this whole charade. He's orchestrating, in my model, this entire charade. Nothing that's out there is real. And he told us, on the 24th of July, in this speech that I have up on the website as number 4 under my items, He told us himself, don't believe anything you're seeing or hearing. When are we going to take him seriously?
Well, I mean, he's a brilliant guy. I mean, he's, you know, his personality is
my perception,
annoying,
Kelly, is that the Trump supporters don't realize how brilliant he is. They're still over here when he is 5 light years ahead over there because they're not thinking big enough. They don't.
How many Trump supporters have you spoken with?
I get so much email, you can't believe how much I get.
Yeah.
And it's from everybody. Well, you know, I get.
Yeah, I don't speak to very many Trump supporters, but there are a couple of Republican types in my sort of business life, and they just want a well-functioning country where their children are going to be, you know, better off than they were, and they're not seeing it right now, and that's why they're going for somebody who's, you know, bringing money back in the country and trying to open factories. I mean, I think it's as simple as that.
Okay. Robert.
Yes.
You've been very patient.
I've been enjoying the dialogue. I'm just waiting.
You're on.
Oh, I'm on.
Here's Robert.
Yes. Well, of course. I agree with Kelly. Many of the very cogent points he's made. I agree with you that there is magic happening, and I think it's positive magic what's happening around Trump. The more the left tries to get Trump's supporters angry, it seems that the opposite is happening, and everybody's just feeling happier and satisfied with the trend. I don't think people realize that the magnitude of the political revolution that we're going through now, and they're still seeing it with bifocals, meaning looking at the two parties as if they're going to remain the two parties. We are watching the dissolution of the Democratic Party is going down in flames. We are watching the shriveling of the Republican Party into one conservative faction and another one that wears red hats and, like, you might be calling it the MAGA Party. So I think new parties are evolving. Democrats have openly endorsed socialism. That's a very clear-cut decision for the rest of the country. And the Republicans are still fragmented. And that fragmentation reminds me of Teddy Roosevelt. And although Teddy Roosevelt lost that election, he knew that he had to start a new political party in order to run for his last run for the presidency. And he started a party that was called the Bull Moose Party. So you might think of MAGA as an echo of the Bull Moose Party of Teddy Roosevelt. And I'd like to say that I haven't seen any president more like Teddy Roosevelt than Donald Trump. As far as Americanism, American values, read Teddy Roosevelt's speech to immigrants on the need to become American, to learn the English language, to assimilate, to learn American values. It's a very eye-opening speech. And I think that that is where we're heading. The Obama administration went so far that there has to be the blowback. And the blowback is Donald Trump. So that's what I'd say. And I can hardly wait to talk about Q.
Okay, we've got about 10 minutes to the top of the hour, and I don't want to miss the break because certain people get very upset when I do that. So let me, with your permission, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to launch into this. If you go back to Radio with Pictures, remember, go to tonight's graphic for the September 1. Click on the graphic. That takes you to it's actually the metaphysical nature of Trump, which is the title, mangled badly. That will take you to the guest page. Scroll down to my item number 3, I want to start with this. During the Republican National Convention, there was gathering momentum to make Mr. Trump the candidate. Well, the normal protocols for the candidate to enter the convention and receive the nomination and give a speech and all that is at the very end of the convention. Well, breaking with protocol, I think it was a couple nights ahead of that scheduled appearance of the candidate who had been, nominated, to actually appear, and he appeared to introduce Melania, but it was out of sync. It's not when he appeared, although that was a little part of it. It was what he did when he appeared. And so if you click on that link, that's a C-SPAN video showing Donald Trump entering the arena that night, literally out of Plato's cave. And I remember, George, I think maybe you and I had some discussions about this, where I pointed out this was so bizarre and so unique and so, well, that word's never very many, many times overused, and just so, and if you read the comments at the end, you'll see an awful lot of people who were not Trump, supporters, acolytes, whatever, were really turned off by this. They couldn't understand in the majesty of the electoral process and all that. So from his appearance at the convention, he was the disruptor in chief. And everybody was commenting about this at a very kind of low level. Oh, it's, out of, wrestling, out of, P.T. Barnum, whatever. Not looking like I was, and I think you were, Georgia, at this incredible metaphysical truth that he was telling everybody on live television. Everything that's going to come from now on is going to be like trying to figure out reality, looking at the two-dimensional shadows. In fact, he stands there and he does this whole 2D, 3D thing, knowing full well what it's going out on the camera, and then walking out into the light and melding from a two-dimensional black and white, or actually black and powder blue, figure.
May I correct your metaphor?
Yeah.
Yes, Plato's cave is correct, but he wasn't walking out of Plato's cave. He was walking into Plato's cave because the light was on the outside. He was backlit. The sun was on the other side of that. He was walking into Plato's cave.
Okay, we can argue, The metaphor works either sign. What is intriguing to me is when you look at the 2D image, until he moves, you can't tell whether he's facing you or facing away from you.
Mm-hmm. But I mean,
the ambiguities, the multiple level
I took it as a Jungian. It was the shadow walking in. He was showing the shadow.
And okay, the shadow, George, the two George, I think he's helping, right? Which metaphorical interpretation is going on? Are they both simultaneous? Is this like Schrodinger's cat, where all of the interpretations are correct?
Well,
again, that ambiguity is part of the metaphor. What is reality?
That's my whole point. Sorry to interrupt here. It's leaving this space where, as you said at the top of the show, we can bring our choice to what we're seeing.
Exactly. And throw something else in the cave there. Remember that in Buddhist tradition, the beginning of the path of light is within the cave of the heart. And there are certain meditation practices that bring about work in the heart center or the cave in the heart. But there's a higher correspondent of that within the head. There's a higher heart center within the head that corresponds to the Kabbalistic Sephiroth Doth, which is the hidden Sephiroth, which has to do with the bridging between dimensions.
We got to define, what's a Sephiroth?
In the Kabbalistic tradition, they have a particular glyph called the Tree of Life that's basically a collection of circles in a particular pattern connected by lines. Mm-hmm. And the circles stand for, which are called Sephiroth, the circles stand for different levels of consciousness. And the Tree of Life goes from the highest that humanity is capable of to the lowest, most unconscious dense, and everything in between.
I think Kinthea is posting, even as we speak, a Sephiroth Tree of Life under George's items and Radio with Pictures tonight. Go ahead, please.
Oh, so there is a higher cave within the head, which corresponds to the hidden Sephiroth Doth, which is the black hole in space. It's your doorway to another dimension. The whole tree of life has 10 Sephiroth with 22 connections, which makes 32. When you add the hidden Sephiroth Doth, you have the mystic 33.
Which, of course, is 19.5.
There you go. So the whole cave simile can be either at a lower level for most of humanity, at a heart level. Who are we going to be in our hearts as people? But it can also relate to a higher degree of consciousness and a beginning of something completely different, which is in the very center of the temple of the head.
Now, if you remember the real story from Plato and the parable of the cave, the people in the cave are living in a shadow world. Their backs are turned to the light.
Right.
They're interpreting the world as shadows. The light is outside the cave. Anyone who walks into the cave casts a shadow in the cave, and that shadow starts to interact with the other shadows in the cave. And the people confuse the shadows for reality. So my point is that, yes, that holds, but it's a very different thing to say that Donald Trump is walking out of the cave into the light, which he is not. He's actually walking out of the light, bringing the shadow into the world of the shadows, because we are the people in the cave that are still looking at the shadows like the Zapruder film and taking them for reality. I think that's my interpretation.
Okay, I'm not basically disagreeing with that. I just think the ambiguity of sign is so interesting. Like, so let's flash forward the film now. Go to item number. Let me do this properly. Number four, which is a link to a story, maybe on Slate, maybe whatever. But the here's the key part of it. Okay, it's covering the VFW speech that he gave on the 24th of July, just a couple months ago. And the most singular aspect of that entire speech, which I think goes hand in hand with his Plato's cave visual metaphor that he regaled the country and the world with that night, his first appearance, you know, when he was going to be the candidate, he'd won. He said in this VFW speech, what you're seeing and what you're reading is not what's happening. And I really have found from talking to an awful lot of Trump people through this magic of email that they're not taking this anywhere near far enough. They're so lost in the common everyday, he said, she said, big good guys, bad guys, you know, soap opera, that they're missing this extraordinary metaphysical dimension. Because again, in my model, nothing that's being talked about in terms of any of this is reality. It's all a mask for a reality that he, meaning Trump, and maybe Putin, and maybe the president of China, and maybe Kim, are privy to. And it's all been an incredible tour de force of distraction to keep the press from glomming on to this reality that is the thing we're not ever supposed to know, or certainly not know right now, because really, really bad things would happen if we knew. Again, that's my take on this, and I'm hoping in the next hour to actually put some meat on the bones. We're up against the top of the hour. We really can't, you know, this show flies by so rapidly. So let me leave it there. You're on the other side of midnight. We shall return, all my panelists, and we'll have at this.
Midnight.com. Tune in to listen to Richard C. Hoagland and his fascinating guests.
join Club 19.5 to get access to exclusive member benefits. Listen to past episodes anytime on any device. Search the archives of over 180 episodes. Membership costs $9.95 a month, 33 cents a day. Support the broadcast that provides you with the most interesting conversation available. Talk radio at the cutting edge of science and thought. The Other Side of Midnight.com.
A mountain with a view. A different shade of blue. A mountain with a view.
Thanks for listening to this exciting first hour. Now, the second and third hour of the show is available to Club 19.5 members only. Please support the show by subscribing to Club 19.5 and join our very interesting community. To do that, please visit the website, theothersideofmidnight.com, and click on the Join Club 19.5 link in the left-hand column. As a Club 19.5 member, you'll gain access to the rest of this show and all previous 350-plus shows that we have done. Now, recent Club 19.5 member archive recording have the commercials removed, and the sound quality has been enhanced. You'll also receive a dedicated private podcast feed that contains these enhanced show recordings. And you'll be able to download the MP3 files directly from the archive if you prefer. As a Club 19.5 member, you'll have access to a private chat server that members use to chat about the show during the show, and you will have a direct channel to post a question that will be read on the air to the guest. And you'll have a place to post questions during our open hailing frequencies. We realize that not everyone wants to call in live, and this gives you an easy way to participate in a live show without having to participate. Club 19.5 members can use this private chat to talk about the shows, ask questions, suggest new guests, and I may even pop on from time to time to answer specific questions. Also, the entire Bridge crew is in these participating chat channels, so you can interact with them as well. You'll also be the first to preview our new videos and reports. We'll be adding exclusive new features to Club 19.5 as we go forward, and boy, have we got some amazing things to tell you about in the coming weeks. So please support the show and don't miss all the exciting new things we have planned. I want to thank all our Club 19.5 members because without your guys' support, this show would not be on the air. Please help us continue growing the show by subscribing to Club 19.5 today. And when I say we really need you, we really need you. Over and out. Thank you.